If you ever ask anybody about Fabian, they remember their pain. It paid us tremendous.
How many people worked in that shelf then?
125 in just, or maybe a little bit more, just our line. The fourth floor was the dresses and blouses and things, and the sixth floor was the clockmakers. Clockmakers means mostly men, they're women too, that make suits and coats. He made just dresses and things. And we all were together, the same floor, and we organized and we worked together and cleaned whatever it is, was taken up beautifully. It's a very good place, we were in very well. Even that time I almost began to have $7 a year.
And that was what, 1949 or so?
Well, by the time, 1941 I started, but by 1943-44 I was fully adjusted to the line. Yeah, and very active in the union. In that shop I was in the committee of complaints or whatever it is. There was elected a committee that would settle the prizes. You know, chair lady is not a friend of mine yet. And I was in the committee that pick up complaints so that a person is to be fired or shouldn't be fired or whatever. In the union, I functioned as an election objection committee.
What was that exactly?
Then once a year, the union has to elect their leaders. They don't stand for life, for all year. Manager, the price committee that isn't there, that helps out. Agents, there's certain names I can't remember right now. There are people that work that if there's any trouble, the shop calls up and the union sends them up. So then they are elected. Then the local elects an election objection committee, about five or six of us, and we have to go over that we approve of all these people that were elected in the union for their jobs.
What was the reason for that?
To find out whether they are the right people that they want.
But
maybe elected if they don't know the people too well.
But they were elected by the whole union?
But not by the union, but by the workers. And you call it a great big meeting, not just one shop, all the union shops. And they name from the floor, and those that get the most votes get elected. But we may not know the people. So this election objections committee function is to find out exactly the background of that person and what we can find out for people that he worked with and whatever, if we can depend on them, because the union depends on them. So I function there for quite a while. Is that?
Was there ever any time that there was a problem with someone elected?
Yes.
There was?
Yeah.
And what, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, we found out that some of them were a little bit stooges. You know, from the workers that they worked with once upon a time. We would go there and we would go to their home and they told us that they would see something about a woman. They wanted to get rid of a worker that they didn't like. They would go to the foreman and make up all kinds of stories, and the poor worker would get fired.
And then what happened when you would find this out about someone?
They always take it up to another meeting and object. The majority, you would bring out the king in the autumn, and then there would be a revolting, and it wasn't the majority anymore. That's it. Person falls out.
And what happened in those cases? Did you then win, or did they
get elect somebody else?
I see.
Yeah. Right.
So this was a way for the union to protect itself. Now, was this partially because of the fight between the left and right?
No, that's a system. Yeah, that's a system in the union. They have certain functions and you have to. The fight was a different thing.
Did that same kind of system operate in Chicago too?
Yes, all of it. It's a unionized system situation.
But they did that rather than the committee investigate someone once they were nominated first, and then the election. Instead, they would investigate afterwards.
Well, when they're nominated, they have to be elected at a meeting. They count with the majority nominate that person. If the nomination comes from one person, but if the majority votes for that person is elected. That's it.
So while you were at Adrian's, you were on this election complaint?
Yeah.
For the local?
Yeah.
Now, by that time, was L.A. pretty well organized, or still
yeah.
was not?
Yeah, it's pretty well organized.
And this was all in Local 94?
Yeah.
And that was all dressmakers?
All dressmakers. Well, they had clockmakers too, but that was a section by itself.
That was a different local?
No, it's in the same local, but there's a certain section, they meet separately, because their prices are different and their claims are different. So they meet separately. But together they're all unionized. So, well, some of them sometimes decide to come up to the dressmaking. As a union person, they take them out.
Okay. Now, were you on the board of the local?
No. That's something it is because I was claimed to be too progressive. So I was nominated for the executive board, and after you're nominated, you're the executive board, not in a shop, but the executive board, you have to go to an interview. The very heads, vice presidents and things get together, and they call you in. So I came there, and that time there was a world situation in Yalta, where President Roosevelt and Churchill and all kinds of people taking up certain questions. It's a historical thing. And I heard about it, but what has it got to do? I was called in to be interviewed. And whatever they asked me about unionism, about local, about workers, and I answered perfect. And I saw on their faces that I was passing. And then a man was sitting there and he said, you tell us, being that you're so well acquainted with these situations, what about the outfit? What's going on there? How do you think that outcome is going to be there? I didn't say has it got to do with unionism or anything, but I looked at him, and I said, if I would be told before that that's the question I was going to ask, I might have made a study of it. I didn't study it up, you see. It was taken up to a man meeting, but did not happen. See, they want to push you out against you, they're not taking you to the courts, they don't like you, Molly. She's not well aware of situations. And I mean, the proof, it's true, I'm not that aware, you know, wasn't.
But it was basically because you were left.
Sure.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that happened while you were
there? Basically, that's why I didn't get my pension. Because the neighboring closed down. You see, there's a certain number of years that this law of getting pension, retirement pension, came in 1953. And anybody that worked certain years between 1953, that was allowed for certain years that you should get that pension. So the knife fell out of Adrian's.
And when was that?
Adrian died in 1952. And all of us, naturally, the place he left a bill, he didn't want his name to go over to anybody else. So naturally he went to the union. The union has to give you a permit paper to go and look for a job. And then whatever they gave us to go look for a job, and if we were accepted, later we were called up that they couldn't use us anymore, they had somebody else. Later we found out that then it was reported to them from the job that we looked for a job, they looked at the list and they said it. And they couldn't go up to the union shop. So then we came back to the union in a store, Stances and a little French boutique, Stella's boutique, in the 9600 block on Wilshire. And she paid me very well, and I worked there, but for the store. So later, when I retired, they showed me that I hadn't had enough years between the law person.
And none of the previous years counted?
Just the so many years between that law passing. So I go to Chicago so very often, and I always go up in the union office, my picture's there and everything, they know me, and I told the story. So they wrote a letter to President Dubinsky. And Dubinsky wrote a letter to me and told me that I shouldn't apply altogether. And I'm not the only one, I'm just talking about me. Most of us have worked in England.
All the people there were progressive? Or were there different reasons?
No, different ones. Just because they thought that they were too, You can get.
So you were
not tolerant? Tell people, some of them do. Mm-hmm. Some, because some of them somehow got locked into a union shop before they asked the union, or they made it for a union shop or whatever. I wouldn't say that all of them, some of them, but quite a number of last ones.
So you were all blacklisted by the union for political activities?
Yeah. So, I get my Social Security, and I work a little bit. Welfare, I don't, it's whatever you call it. I just don't apply for anything, it's not counted. Sick people, incapacitated, they have to. People ask me if I want help, I don't take for my children either. And the children ask me why, and I told them if I was incapacitated, I would. But if I can help myself, why shouldn't I have the pleasure of helping them? It's very easy for me to learn a little bit, very easy.
Now, when you told me before that before you came out here, your husband decided to go to the Soviet Union, right? And then when did you want to tell me the story? I didn't get it on tape before of how you voted and you found out you weren't a citizen and you're hearing and everything.
Yeah, that's it.
Do you want to tell me the story again?
Yeah, I came here. I was a citizen because it was a law that if you marry a citizen, you don't have to take out citizen papers. You naturally become involved in that. They are in function tonight, even though that it went off. In what year it went off, I don't remember exactly, but I kept on. You see, I came here in 1925, and it went off in 1923, but we were still together there. So they didn't spar because I was still under bed. But if you become separated, you have to have the citizen papers. See? And then I came here in 1925. I functioned and I voted another time. And then all of a sudden I got a letter from the Citizens Bureau that I'm not qualified for an American citizenship. I had to apply personally by myself. I didn't understand what it meant. But didn't do anything wrong. I never said a lie there or anything. So I went to an attorney that was a fascinating, young, very intelligent person. And he helped me and I got a papers. I went to school, Howard High School, took that specialty, just civics. And I passed.
And then you had special hearing?
Yes. Special hearing. But I passed because all my qualifications, they looked into the background here. That I worked all the time and I honestly made my living and so they passed me very nicely. And that's good. I traveled all over the world.
But basically the problem is because he went to the Soviet Union.
The problem was for that and then that we were not together. Yeah, that's it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Two was in New York, local number four was in Los Angeles, local number lived in Chicago. I just wanted to remember those things. The name of injunction that I didn't understand what it meant, I had it marked down, election objection committee that I functioned in. I just told you what I put in there. That the union?
Now, going back to when you were in Chicago, when you would go into the non-union shop to try and organize it, you would essentially go to the women then and talk to them about the union. And what was the reaction usually?
It wasn't easy. No. Some of them didn't like it. They a little peculiar. They mean, why should people tell me what to do and what not to do? Not trying to find out the good, the benefit that you get. That was the hardest thing to penetrate. Because it seemed to them like they're working under the supervision of people. You can't do anything. But if you don't work under the supervision, they are the foreman takes the advantage of you. That was a hard time to penetrate. But there even now are some. Yeah.
Now what would usually happen if you say were able to reach a few people?
There was the majority in the shop decided that they won't become union. The rest of them have to join or they go.
So after you talk to a few people, you would call a meeting?
Okay. Then we would let them know from the union and they would call a meeting and they would talk to them again, and if they saw that there was a majority, they'd let the others know you're taking it or you're meeting it.
Now, in most of these places, were you the only one organizing the shop, or there were others?
Sarah's. Yeah. It usually sent up a man. The carrots and the presses are mostly men. It sent up one or two men there, and all together it worked.
And then you would work with the operators mainly?
Operators and finishers.
And finishers were women too?
Yeah. All the dressmaking finishers are women.
But so
the operators are men too sometimes. Not as men as women, but they are men, operators. But finishers and drapers are mostly women.
But you would organize men and women?
Together with the men they would organize, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That too.
Do you remember any specific experiences that happened while you were organizing?
You hear after I mentioned Helen Rose. Helen Rose is a famous designer in the studios, 20th century, and she opened up a place for herself on Jefferson near Western Avenue. And she also called up in the union because they are happy to know where to get the real people that you can trust those things. It's very high class. It's a very intelligent woman, and she had a lot of people working there. And she promised the union that she'd communicate with. After a few months, maybe they would lean to her work. She promised, no, she wouldn't. She stayed on for a little while, the union kept on appealing to her, and things were done like a strike there.
When was that?
They lost the strike. 1959.
So the McCarthy period was over, you were no longer in trouble with the union blacklist?
No. But they lost the strike there. Forever.
So they closed, it became a closed shop?
No, it became an open shop.
I mean open shop.
Right. Closed to them. Yeah. I don't even know if she's still in business or not. I don't know. But she trained in other people. While we were working there, and she kept on delaying, she took in new people that we were helping out, because in a place that you want to make a union shop, you're very outgoing. We trained them, we helped them out, and then they remained there.
So you left there then in 1959?
It didn't take us 5.5 months.
You were out on strike?
Yeah, the union paid us strike benefit. Very little, but something.
And then from there you went where?
And they gave up eventually the Department of Employment and applied for jobs. And they sent us some jobs. Yeah. You're not have a special government employment. They pay you when you don't work, unemployment insurance.
So you went then to a union shop?
Yeah. So, yeah, an employment shop. It's just by design. It's a very nice place. And Robertson Boulevard. Yeah, over.
Now, how many strikes were you involved in altogether? Can you remember from the time you first came?
I couldn't recall. In here?
Well, no, for in New York, in Cleveland, Chicago.
I don't remember how many.
Were there very many?
Great many. Very, very many.
How did you manage before they had strike funds? What would you do during the strike?
They were doing the time that the union paid us a little bit too. Yeah. It was bad, very, very bad. Sometimes you had to borrow money and then when you worked, you paid it back. We helped one another out. Because the unemployment doesn't pay fast type time. No. Just unemployment. Then you prove that that you took off yourself either. You have to be laid off or fired. Laid off in between time when it's slow, or fired altogether, or the place closes up. Then you collect unemployment. That's right. But not doing it right, you don't go to apply for unemployment.
Unions. But in those early strikes in Chicago, you were able to get some strike funds from the union?
No. That started in California.
I see. Now, were you ever arrested again after that arrest?
No. That's enough. It's a little bit of experience.
Because in that 1924 start, there were a lot of people arrested, weren't there?
Yeah, but I wasn't...
But you were no longer...
I would come and see sometimes them, but I wasn't punishing them.
You were picketing them with them?
A little bit. Sometimes in the afternoon, they'll come out, yeah. But not enough to be involved to be arrested, but a lot of people were arrested and stayed in jail for the longest time and everything. Very big struggle.
How many of the people who were organizing were women, usually, would you say?
Not as many as men. There are quite a few, I would say, but not as many. Yeah. Some of them very militant.
Did you have any contact with Rose Schneiderman when she came to Chicago and organized?
I can't recall. Could have, but I can't recall. I still meet some people that I was in Chicago last summer and we went to a theater, Goodman Theater. There, see some nice play and everything. And I think I mentioned to her, I'll let a couple of them over to me and I think I will see guests with the business agent of Local 100.
Judith
Ginsburg.
Oh.
Judith Ginsburg. She's the business agent.
I came across his name here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I wanted to see what...
Mentioned when I served him here as the president and Judith Hoffman, and then the first name was the vice president. Yeah, and in the picture there, the magazine is there, print them out for you.
Oh, okay. When was that that he was...
Business agent? In the early 20s. Maybe between 19, 20, 21, something like that.
Oh, I see. I have a note here that in 1921, he started a new organizing drive after the strike in the union wasn't doing too well. So you worked directly with him then in that organizing?
Yeah.
But most of the way in which you organized was by going to a non-union show and actually working there.
Yeah. Helping out the organizers. I wouldn't really call myself an organizer. I was their assistant. As I said before, to us, they worked.
They would decide which shop to go to.
They would tell which shop, and they would want us every day to let them know what happened, how far they would, can they go to the home, who is supplyable, and we would let them know everything. Every day we'd let them know. Yeah. Here too, in the fingers.
Now, would you go to the homes of the workers you were trying
sometimes,
to organize?
Sometimes, yeah. If they wanted to, they couldn't talk in the shop, they were afraid or something, they would say, can I come over? Yeah, come over.
Oh, so it was the more sympathetic ones?
Yes, those that really were willing and able to learn what it was, yeah. Because he helped them a lot too. When the Department of Employment began to pay the unemployment insurance, a lot of people were very much backwards. did nothing about it. You didn't know what they had to, they thought it was charity or something. They had to help him and take him and everything. And so they were very grateful for that. So made them pay union people. Because these unemployment pays union and non-union. It's a government, and a lot of people don't know anything about it. Even now, you'd be surprised. People that come from other countries, from Spain or something, you know, they're laid off, and you go over to them and you see, or they're sick, they don't know there's such a thing as sick benefit. It's a big thing. You have to, so we have to make a special study and become helpful in the shop for that. A person is sick, a person goes to the hospital, you go out and you apply to the unemployment.
When did you first get sick benefits, do you remember?
The unemployment came first. That was in 1926. Sick benefit for some of us in the early 40s.
Oh, but up until then, the union had never won that.
No, the union. Then it became sick benefit from the union, sick benefit from the government. See? So if you had left somebody, one or two people in the shop that they keep in touch with, you have to report when a person had an accident or whatever happens, and to you the person collects whatever it is. See? It's hospitalization and everything. Many thousands of people don't know anything about it. You may be surprised that you sit and talk to people and they look at you. What?
So one of your jobs was to be aware of what all the benefits were and to explain it to all the other workers.
So
make sure they got it.
They still call up many people. Mommy, what do you do in a case like that? How do you go about this like that? And I make it special. I have the little booklet that I mail in and I let them know.
Did the union train you in this, or you just picked it up yourself?
Well, the union sent in for literature there and gave it to you, and you train yourself. So, I had a Czechoslovakian girl here that Mary came from New York, and she lived in an outskirts of New York in a village somewhere, and she came in, she worked with me, and she caught her finger in the machine or whatever, and something. And I called up, somebody called up that she couldn't come to work, so I went to see her. It never even occurred to me. Intelligent, rather. I says, Mary, did you apply for the bank? There. Went down to Cali. She forever remained grateful. She was sick for 7 months. Didn't collect 7 months, but collected whatever it is, Medicare and everything. See, the workers, it's not the union alone has more meaning than just union for prices, for wages. It organizes and it, in many more ways, gets the workers aware of important things that, tragically enough, they're not aware of it. You need them. So that's what helped a lot. That's what helped us to organize, is because the people felt help, assistance coming. The boss, the foreman, what can you, you're sick, goodbye, taking somebody else. Eventually they get well, you come back according to the union. You can't fire a person for having been away or sick for some time. You can take somebody out, but when the person is ready, you've got to go back. That person says, sorry, you're taken. So when you tell this to ignorant people, why should I want to belong to the union? You may name out all these important things. You get them. And they see it's true. So that's a big job.
What kind of things did you think the union would accomplish? Did you think it would accomplish more than just helping the workers? Did you think it would bring a lot of other changes? What kind of changes?
This kind of changes. To open up classes or lectures sometimes, which they did. And make people aware of things that haven't got exactly just to do with the shop, with the machine, or the needle. A person must know what he's entitled to there. For instance, there is a law that if you quit a job for no matter what reason, you cannot get unemployment insurance if you quit a job. But there are certain legal things to study up, that there are certain jobs that you're legalized to quit. As for instance, there's a limitation of transportation. If you have to go so much out of your way that it takes you so much time and costs so much money, you have a legal right to apply to the union for a job within reach, within a more logical reach. And if you have to wait for that application to go through, you can collect unemployment. And I made a study of it and I helped them out. So we used to call them together in a evening once a week, and the things that I found out, that I studied out, I would throw it out to them.
That was here in Los Angeles?
Yes, in Los Angeles. I myself had to, did it. I learned it by my own self. I had a job in Media Gray, which was on Rodeo Drive near Dilsha Bova, and I had to take a Melville's bus to Fairfax, a Fairfax bus to Dilsha, a Dilsha bus all the way to Rodeo Drive. And it took me 2 hours or maybe more sometimes to get to and from it. So as long as I could take it, I take it. When I couldn't, I made a study of it and I found out and I applied. And I had to go to a urine in the unemployment. You just don't come in their goals. The people by the window cannot apply to it. They send you to somebody and then go to a urine and I passed my interview. And I only not began to collect, but collected for the weeks that I had to wait until this law went through. But these people, because people haven't got the patience, and they don't feel close enough to those things. But most people don't want to pay attention to something that can get away from it. It's dry, it's not interesting. But if you make them aware of it, you'd be surprised how enthused they get.
So your commitment with the union continued from the time you first got involved in Poland?
A lifetime. Not now. Not pay attention to the union at all. I mean, I'm not against the Poland. I just have nothing to do with it. That's it.
Now, after you worked in... So, 1959 or 1960, with that strike, was pretty much the end of your union activity then.
That's right. By 1960-61, I was through completely.
Were you just very fed up with the union?
No, I just didn't. I don't work anymore on their line, so what am I going to go there for? That's all. And then when I found out that I'm not going to get the benefit I applied in every possible way, I left them alone, and that's all.
How do you feel about the union now, looking back over the years of organizing? What do you think?
They are much weaker. They lost us. And they know it. They haven't got the kind of people. But the other people that weren't up to par got disappointed by seeing what happens to the people that need so much. And they just fell apart. Very weak. There are still union shots, but not what we thought it would be.
Do you think it was because of the McCarthy period, primarily?
No, it's a mixture of everything. A big mixture of everything.
What other sorts of things do you think were responsible for?
I mean, this is responsible because the workers didn't get enthused by seeing what happens to the people that were so active. So why should I give my time to it? I'll work and I'll make a living. That's all. And they do.
So compared to what you felt in 1920, it was quite a disappointment to you then. When did you start to feel that way, do you think?
When that?
The disappointment about what the union had become. And
well, it was about, maybe about 7, 8 years already that I see.
Oh, it's very recent.
Yeah, sure. That could be Rose, Helen Rose's place. And after I was I mean, I'm the only human being. I shouldn't get. And the union in Chicago writes my biography to them, starting from the beginning of 1916, and that doesn't go through. I don't say that people shouldn't be unionized or people shouldn't be active, but I myself am the very myself. About the unemployment, you know, you're marked down there about the kind of work you did too. So they recommended me to some places that was of interest. You heard of the Chouinard Art School?
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah. They still call me up sometimes when they have a fashion show or when they have to train the graduate students. Good job.
Looking back then, your main union activity began really in Cleveland, when you would go from shop to shop.
I began in New York, but not long enough. I had very little time, and I had very little language to get around it. But I observed in New York that when I came to Cleveland, I already had a feeling what I wanted to do in the Isle of
Cleveland. And that was by going shop to shop?
Yeah, a few shops. Not too many, but a few.
And then in Chicago, you came and the local was beginning to form right when you came.
Right.
And then you became involved in the price committee and then later as the chairlady.
Chairlady, yeah.
Now, was there both a chairman and a chairlady in each shop? Just a chairperson?
Unless there were two big departments. If there was a clerk department and a dress department that belongs to the same firm, this each would have a chairman and a chairlady.
So then yeah. You stayed at that one place and were the chair lady there.
Yeah.
Then after that, did you hold any other jobs in the shops in Chicago?
Also in the price committee mostly, yeah, assisting always. Wherever I worked, I mostly joined in for helping out. I couldn't just sit and let everybody do the work for me. No.
But after you left Albert and Cutler's in there too, it was going to new shops that were non-union.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
organize those
right.
Jobs. Then when you came out here is when you became involved in this election.
Later the election objection committee. Here too I became active in organizing, like Patricia Perkins, mm-hmm. and in most of the places. And then the election objection committee doesn't function forever, just in election times. When you have to elect, if that's all, then you're through. For that particular moment.
Now, F. Patricia Perkins, were you the chair lady? You were the chair lady there too. So you had the same job.
Yeah.
Then at Adrian's.
Adrian's, I worked in a committee, helping out to adjust whatever problems and things.
Oh, that was the complaints.
Yeah.
Group.
That's right.
But the election objection was in L.A.
That's in the office of the union.
Mm-hmm.
You need to not in the shop. No.
But that was here in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was just for one election or
one election. Just that one election. That's all. Yeah.
And then when you were nominated to run for the union and had the trouble, when was that?
For which one was it?
When you were
for the executive board?
Yes, when they interviewed
That must have been about in 1945. Around there, yeah. Right.
So the union by then had already become conservative.
Yeah.
Was that true all over the country, or Los Angeles
all
was
over.
Especially bad?
All over. Very bad all over. Still stays that way. Can you do? I suppose that's how humanity has to go on. That's how wars break out and all the other things. People disagree.
But the fight earlier in the 1920s, you don't remember any people who were involved in that fight between the right and the left?
No, I don't remember. All I remember is helping to strengthen local government. Because it began to function very well. I mean, by so many memberships, And so it involved a lot of work because of so many immigrants that were coming in those years that is impossible to describe.
That was in the early 20s? And each time there'd be a flow of immigrants, you'd have to make sure that...
Help them out in every possible way. Come in a shop, just help him adjust himself. He didn't know how to behave or how to... He'd come in from God knows for sake. Have to help him out. And by that, you'll get closer so that he has confidence in you. And it works both ways. Then you want him into the union, they go into it. Because you know what you're telling me.
Now, in Chicago, during that period of organizing, would the union grow and then fall down again? Or
no, no, it was growing. Yeah. Not too fast, but it was growing, yeah.
So
because the immigrants, most factories were filled with immigrants, and they needed the security feeling that we gave them. All they saw in the union is that they're secure, which was true. So because if you don't do a thing right or something, you'll be thrown out. But in a union shop, you're being taught, you're being helped. Unless you keep on ruining things or whatever. So naturally they felt secure and they listened to us and stuck with us.
Now, with the immigrants, did you use Yiddish again then? They were mainly Jewish immigrants, again from Russia and Eastern
Europe. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Russian girls and women didn't want to be too much. The Jewish, because they suffered. Yeah. Before the revolution, and it took time to adjust after the revolution. It wasn't that easy.
Were there any other things that you remember from the Chicago days?
Trying to think. No, nothing particularly. Just trying to work, and that's all. Think about the other days.
Did you ever think about yourself as being a woman and being having that as a separate battle, or you thought was all in terms of the union?
No. I don't think I ever had that feeling. I never feel above or below. I just go in with people, and if I agree, I agree, and if I don't agree, I learned quite a bit not to get into quarrels and things. That I learned quite a bit.
Did the suffrage people approach the women in the union at all when they were fighting for the women's vote?
Not that I remember. I don't recall that. The women didn't care too much. They came back from the European countries. Rather, I would say, I wouldn't say retarded, but quite a bit backwards. They didn't care about or not, what difference does it make? I work with a woman right now that comes up to help out. She comes from Belgium. She's not a citizen. In America, I don't know how long. And they're talking about the voting recently, something I said to her, who do you vote for? Are you a Democrat? He says, I'm nothing. Just like that. And it's true. That tests. Don't leave it alone. In the younger years, I believe in college, talked about it. But now, leave it alone. I have to take care of my own disappointments. That I was very